It's 2:00. I'm calling to order the January 27th, 2026 Ponce Inlet Planning Board meeting. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's see, can we get the roll call, Debbie?
Mr. Obeck?
Present.
Mr. Young? He's absent. Mr. Reback?
Present.
Mr. Cannon?
Here.
Mr. Carney?
Here.
Mr. Breen?
Present.
Ms. McDonald?
Present.
And we have a quorum with four members and two alternates, so we do have a full quorum.
Thank you. And now we need to do the oaths of office.
I have five. Mr. Obeck, Mr. Young is not here. Mr. Carney, Mr. Breen, and Ms. McDowell, if you would please stand and raise your right hand. And at the end, if you would please say, I do. Do you hereby solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the state of Florida, and the charter and ordinances of the town of Ponce Inlet, and that you are duly qualified to serve under the Constitution of the state of Florida and the charter of the town of Ponce Inlet, and that you will well and faithfully perform the duties of the planning board, so help you God.
How are you?
Thank you. Congratulations. And if you would please sign your oath and return it to me after the meeting, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. So now that we have a full board, we need to elect maybe a new, that would be good, chair and a vice chair. Or do we need to do something else first? Hold on. Nope. Yeah, we're going to elect the chair.
I'd like to nominate Michael Reback for chairman of the planning board. In making that nomination, I wish to emphasize I hold no animosity toward Mr. Carney or the job he has done. I'm concerned that he recently spoke publicly and questioned the judgment of certain staff and council members, as is his right, which suggested, I believe, a lack of confidence in your ability. I feel it's critical that the chairman of the board, as a primary go-between with staff and council, should respect their judgment and foster mutual confidence among the parties. Thank you.
I have a second.
I'll second. May I also comment on my second?
Sure.
I'm troubled that, having heard what I just heard, and I mean, I've been to council meetings and have seen John talk about specifically budget issues and an issue with one of the members of our town leadership. I'm troubled that that could affect the ability to effectively basically be our representative, in that the town could harbor ill will towards him in his role here. Because golly gee, if the town has that kind of posture or potential posture, wait until I get involved with issues in this town, which they obviously know I will be getting involved heavily. I would hope that the town can keep things separate in how they view the function of this board and the rights of a citizen to express their opinion. I have the highest regard for John in his role, in the role that he's had. I also have the highest regard for Mike Rivak. And it's that second comment that I'm willing to second that motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Any other comments related to that?
I guess I've been on the board now for a couple years, and we haven't had a lot of meetings, so I do have a little bit of concern with taking over as chair in that we haven't been through a lot of issues that we've had to deal with. So from that perspective, I'm willing to take the position, but I really feel that my experience is a little bit short of some of the other people that are currently on the board. So, and I know Joe's been chairman for some time and respect his nomination. I mean, Mark's been on the board longer than I have and dealt with a lot of issues. I'm not sure if he's interested in the chair position or not, but I'm a little bit concerned about my experience from that perspective. So, to be honest. I'm willing to take the position, but I'm going to need a lot of guidance from people that have more experience, you, Joe, John, Mark, and others on the board to really be effective in that role.
Mike, I think that's wise to realize you haven't seen as many topics because we haven't had as many meetings in the last year or so. However, I think we all work together as a team, and Mark and I might give each other grief, but we respect one another, and we always will fully share what we think, and nothing gets held back on this team. So I think as long as everybody on the board who's going to vote on this can be open and be forthcoming in what they feel, and Joe and I respect each other, and I respect his opinion very much, and he has been the chair for a long time and has very good counsel as far as how the board should operate. And so I think as long as, you know, we keep operating the way we have, which is everybody gets to speak their piece, then it doesn't really matter who's the chair, because the chair doesn't control the agenda. The chair just dictates who speaks when and kind of runs the proceedings, but you don't have any more power as chair than anyone else sitting here. And so as long as I think you just look at the other people for help and input, which you would do, then I think you'd be 100% fine as a chair. And Joe will certainly be able to say, hey, what if we tried this, or Mark, or any of the board members can still suggest things, just like we always do. It doesn't matter as far as where I sit, that if you have a ton of experience or not, as long as the process gets followed and everybody gets to have their input, then you can make your decisions based on everyone's input, just like any other chair would.
Joe, so you, to clarify, your point was that you felt that John could compromise, I'm not sure that's the right word, the effectiveness of this board, were he chair?
I feel that he is he's a primary contact between the staff, council.
Right.
And my concern is simply that I don't believe he is he respects their judgment as maybe he that I would feel that he needs to, and possibly that may be reciprocal. So that's, in other words, I think we need to have somebody that's not necessarily charged in that manner, one way or the other. I'm not sure. I can't speak for the staff and the members of the board. I have a sense that that might be the case. I have a sense, based on John's commentary publicly, that he has somewhat less respect, and that's his right to speak out and obviously say that. And I respect him for saying that, but I don't think that position is as good as it should be for this board. I think we need somebody on this board that chairs it, that can go to the manager, the mayor, council, somebody in the planning department, and talk to them and respect their ability and expect to have a level of confidence going in both directions.
What I hear is that the potential exists for people or people in town administration or leadership to have bias as it relates to John's role here if he were chair, because of him voicing his opinion as a resident of Ponce Inlet.
Well, I think he would run into it. It's not, I don't think that by removing him as the chair, they're going to change that. I think my point is to have somebody in the chair that doesn't have that. My opinion.
So in my vernacular, then, wouldn't have the baggage associated with being a verbal citizen who challenges some of the town's positions.
No, that would be, you would have the, if you created that, then I would say the same thing, probably. In other words, I don't think we need to have somebody in the position, whether it's you, me, John, that has the potential to create, I'm not going to say conflict, but not have the ability to go to the board, go to the staff, and go to the council if necessary, and go with and let's say foster confidence and have respect for the people that you're dealing with.
Well, Joe, I'll say this about that. The thing that I did at the meeting was actually just present some facts, and I didn't really question anyone's judgment. What I said was, given this set of facts, I need somebody to explain to me why this was sound judgment, because it didn't appear to be to me, because given the facts that I stated, if I had been in a position of leadership in the town government, I wouldn't have done the organizational things that were done, and I stated that very clearly.
Yes.
Okay, so that's fine. I have a right to ask a question. I have a right to make my statements. However, I never got an answer to that question. No one from this town government ever came back to me and said, hey, John, that was a legitimate question or an illegitimate question, but here's the answer. I've gotten zero feedback from that. So they've never explained to me why, given the facts that I presented, that the things they've done organizationally make any logic. And so I understand your position, and you could be correct. They could hold that against me, but all I did was point out facts and ask for some clarification that I've never received. That's all that happened.
Okay. Well.
And like I said before, I don't really think it matters who the chair of this board is, as we all can speak our voice, and I certainly hope that all of our members are comfortable to do that always, and I'm confident that with Mr. Rivak as chair, that we have that ability. So that's okay. That's 100% fine. So we have a second on the motion. Do we have any other comments before we vote on that?
Peter Breen, I feel like I kind of jumped into a little bit of inside baseball here. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like I should probably just recuse myself from the dialogue.
No. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt, but that's not a basis. You don't have a conflict of interest, and if you have a conflict of interest, then we have a different discussion.
No conflict of interest.
Okay, then recusal is not an option.
Hearing no more comments, let's get a roll call vote on the motion for Mr. Rivak to be the chair of the planning board.
Mr. Cannon?
Yes.
Mr. Obed?
Yes.
Mr. Rivak?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Carney?
Yes.
Mr. Breen?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next, we need to elect a vice chair, and I will take a motion on that, unless we have any discussion before we get to a motion. Nope. So anyone have a motion on electing a vice chair for the planning board?
I propose John Carney for vice chair of the planning board. Pardon?
I'm sorry, did you nominate?
Mr. Carney. John Carney.
Is there a second? Not hearing one. Can we get... go ahead, Mark.
I was going to ask, are there other nominations?
Who's the...
I guess I would actually second Mark's nomination of John to be vice chair. I think his having a different view of the point on certain topics would be beneficial.
Okay. We have a second on that motion. Can we get a roll call?
Mr. Obag?
Yes.
Mr. Reback?
Yes.
Mr. Cannon?
Yes.
Mr. Carney?
Yes.
And Mr. Breen?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Brings us up to the meeting minutes. Do we have any comments on the meeting minutes as written? Mr. Cannon's helping me out. We actually aren't on the minutes. We are on the adoptive agenda. Can I get a motion to adopt the agenda as written?
Move to adopt the agenda as written.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Okay, the motion carries. The agenda is adopted. And now meeting minutes. Do we have any comments or changes to the minutes before we have a motion to adopt those?
I have none.
I would make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the meeting carries and the minutes are approved as written. Brings us to report of staff. Mr. Lear.
Yes, thank you. A few items here today. At the town council meeting on December 18th, they adopted with second reading of ordinance 2025-08 regarding the definition of a farmer's market. Remember that came through this board back in October, I do believe. There was also approval of resolution 2025-19 electing not to grant ad valorem tax exemptions for affordable housing to certain properties under the Live Local Act. Some current projects we've got, some resiliency. We have the adaption plan project. There's a quarterly report. There's been the draft plan reviewed by staff. And there will be a public meeting on the adaption plan on January 29th. That's this Thursday at 5:30 here in the chambers. Also, Transform 386, the CDBGDR, there's a thing called the Disaster Risk Reduction Areas. It'll be submitted to Volusia County. That's going to map out all of these areas that are outside the 100-year floodplain, but still flood anyway. So they're going to be mapping that out. There's another resilient infrastructure benefits cost analysis tool that's being tested with the East Coast Florida Regional Planning Council. And a sand placement project update. As of yesterday, the county contractor resumed sand hauling and placement operations on January 12th. Once the berm is fully constructed and the stockpile is shaped to match the berm, the final stretch of the project will be planted with those seagrass plantings. These plantings are expected to begin in early spring of this year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The ocean view, that little park, mm-hmm. parking spot. Was that dirt coming in, or was that sand from the?
I just saw that. Actually, I probably saw it on Facebook first. So the county didn't. I wasn't notified of what that is. So I need to reach out to.
Yeah. The land, not from the beach.
Correct. Correct. I saw that too. So I need to reach out to the county and see what's really going on.
You're good to continue today if you want. Any other questions for Darren or? And that would be item five, item six. There's anyone with any correspondence or disclosure or tripartite communications?
And we're looking forward to it, too.
Clinton. Listen, I'm sure you're on the edge of your chair. I'm sorry I forgot the popcorn machine today. I did want to offer you an alternative, but before I offer you the alternative, can you start the video briefly, and I'll tell you when to stop it, okay? Because I want you to see something very important.
I'm Cliff Shepherd for Legally Informed. For the last 10 years, I've been giving presentations.
Okay.
Who is that?
That is the point of this whole thing. Okay. Hair, it's not all gray or white. And at that point, I'm telling you, I've already been doing that for 10 years, and this was 20 years ago. So it's been a while. So I'm going to offer you an option. This is about a 20, 25-minute video, something like that, where you can see what I can tell you in person and watch it all with all the fancy stuff they do to make a video. You should know that the lady who was behind the company that insisted on making this video is dead. That tells you how old the video is. But there's only one significant change in the law since then. Actually, there's a couple, but in terms of what you're relevant to you, only one. Or I can simply go through and tell you the same things that you would hear in the video, and then you can watch the video on your own time because the town owns a copy. That is up to you. What would you prefer? Because there's a lot to cover. The Sunshine Law is the most important thing to keep you out of jail, but I got other things to talk about as well. So what would you like me to do today? You want to listen to the video now, or do you want me to talk to you about what's in the video, and then you can watch it on your leisure?
Didn't we listen to the video or watch the video last time? The last one we had last January?
No, we had someone come in.
Okay. I just think the picture is great because there I am with my eyes closed at this particular moment, my hands like that. I got a nice tie. Anyway.
Just, Cliff?
Yes.
Clearly, this adds a few pounds to you.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It's that. What does they say? The camera always adds 10.
Yes.
Well, in this
go
case,
ahead.
More
Sorry.
Than that. So let me quickly jump into why Sunshine Law is important and why it's the most important thing I talk about, because it's the thing that keeps you out of jail. What do I mean by that? Well, violating Sunshine, particularly if it's done in a way that's deemed to be intentional, is a criminal offense. And that means you can get prosecuted. It's a misdemeanor that leads to potential sentences up to you in jail. Does that happen often? No. Does it happen? It absolutely does. If you were to watch the video all the way through, you'd see examples of people who actually went to jail, including a former president of the State Senate, a guy named W.D. Childers, who was a known entity and fighter. Literally, they had physical fights on the floor of the legislature. And after he got out of the legislature, he went back to his home city of Pensacola and thought he could do things the way they do in Tallahassee. And what he found quickly is that the rules in Tallahassee are different. When they're applied locally, they don't apply. And the rules that I'm about to tell you about do. The legislature is exempt from most of the Sunshine Law issues. You guys are not. And so he got himself in trouble thinking he could act as the president of the Senate while he was serving on the commission of Pensacola, and as a result, he ended up in jail. So this is serious business, and that's why I spend most of my time talking about it. But all this stuff has relevance to you for the simple reason that you're all volunteers. Last time I checked, you're not getting a check for sitting here. You could be playing golf. You could be fishing. Or somebody said they were on the beach, which I'll never figure that out. It's too cold for me. But at any rate, that's the point, that you don't serve in these capacities to get yourself, your reputation harmed, potentially prosecuted, or any of those things. And so the whole purpose of these trainings is to keep you from doing any of those things that would cause you to be in that position. And also it's important to know that if you were to get in trouble and to be found responsible for any of the things we're talking about here, you are on your own. So only if you are defended and win do you get reimbursed for legal fees, costs, expenses. If that doesn't happen, it's all on you. And so for that reason, I urge you to pay attention to what I'm about to say. The Sunshine Law is a law which was designed to show everybody essentially how the sausage is made, how government operates, and not allow that to happen behind closed doors. And the dictates of it are pretty straightforward. It is that any time one or more of you, meaning people on the same board, not on other boards, like you could talk to someone who's on the cultural services board or the emergency services or whatever the other one is that we have, essential services board, that you could do, but you cannot talk to one another. So you can talk to council members, you can talk to whatever, but not each other. If two or more people of the same board are talking about issues that are either reasonably likely to come before them or are coming before them, and you're not in a public meeting where minutes are being kept that's been properly noticed, you are violating the Sunshine Law. And it doesn't matter how you communicate that. It doesn't matter whether it's by email, by text, by phone message, or any of those things. And you can be prosecuted, and in almost every case that I can think of, you will be if a complaint is made. At minimum, you will get investigated. How do I know? As I've said many times, Joe will know, I've been investigated twice, and I'm the attorney. And the reason is because a lot of state attorneys don't understand that the law applies to public elected officials, not people like me. I'm, for that purpose, staff. But it's nevertheless, I can tell you, so as someone who's been there, not fun to be investigated. And the newspaper doesn't seem to make the distinction that you're the attorney. They just think, well, the accusations that the city attorney violated Sunshine by doing the job of speaking to the people he's supposed to speak to. So it's a little bit crazy. But certainly if you are in the position where it does apply to you, which it would, as well as the council and any other committees in town, you will find that even though front page news doesn't mean what it used to anymore, because a lot of people don't read newspapers, they just get online, but there still will be stories written, and you can do a Google search and find stories of people being pursued for public records violations and Sunshine Law violations. I used to put that in the latest news clippings, but it got too depressing because I talk a lot about this, and yet people still don't pay attention. And that's what I hope doesn't happen to you. I don't want you to be in a situation where something happens to you and you can stay with a straight face. Well, I didn't know that. This is why we're having this discussion. And so that's the most important part, is to understand what you need to know. Not everything in this packet, but what you need to know about how to stay out of trouble, okay? So if you think you can come up with a way to get around it, it's been tried. And the courts have stated repeatedly that, quote, every evasive device that is designed to avoid the effects of the Sunshine Law can and will fail, close quote. The courts understand the lengths that people will go to walk around this law. For whatever reason. Sometimes it's social. That's my buddy. Why can't I talk to him? I saw him at a party, and all we have in common is the fact that we serve on this board. So, of course, we talked about board stuff. None of that matters. Your intentions do not matter. Innocence does not matter. The conduct matters. And that's the most important part of this takeaway. So, outside of these walls, you are not to communicate amongst each other in any way, shape, or form, social media, text, phone calls, passing notes among one another, out on your way to the parking lot, on the way in from the parking lot, after the meeting's over, as you're headed to the parking lot, none of those about the business of the town, or you will have committed a violation. And then the only question left is, will someone report you and prosecute? And frequently, that issue turns on whether they like you or they don't. And by they, I mean the public that will report you. There have been numerous cases of people who are reported based on conversations they were having in a restaurant. Now, you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? They go out to eat, sure. But to someone who has a suspicious mind, and you may have noticed that people's minds are more suspicious these days than they used to be, if they don't like what you're deciding or what you're recommending to the council to decide, then that becomes a suspicious conversation, and it becomes the subject of a complaint, and that complaint can then become your nightmare of an investigation for 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it's going to take. And ultimately, I can almost tell you, based on just that example, you would be found not guilty of anything that's prosecutable, because the critical factor is not that you are communicating, it's what you are communicating about, and the absence of proof of that would mean there's not a case there. But why is it important to you to know this? Because the investigation is as painful as everything else, because that will make the paper, quote unquote, or the online news sources that we use today or whatever, regardless. And you can say, well, we weren't talking about that. Suspicious minds assume that you would, and you will, which is why, for example, when the council says, well, we're going to go to Tallahassee, I say, please don't ride in the same car, because even if you don't talk about the stuff, the presumption will be that you are. And so that's important. So what does it take to comply with Sunshine Law? Obviously, we talked about not communicating. To comply with Sunshine Law, you have to have meetings that are noticed, like this one, in a facility that's open to the public, like this one, without additional cost to the members of the public, like this one, and minutes are kept. There is an additional requirement now, which didn't exist when I made this video, which is it used to not require that you even allowed public participation. That might seem like, what? Are you kidding me? And it seems that way because in Florida, even before this was a legal requirement, every city and town that I know of allowed it anyway. But as a matter of law, it was not required. Now, as an additional adjunct to the Sunshine Law, before any decision is made, you have to allow public comment if there's public there to comment. So those are the requirements. And they sound simple enough. But you have to go back to how lawyers can make anything more complicated. I are one, I can say that. Here's the problem. A meeting of two or more of you is any of those methods of communication that I mentioned. Texts, phone calls, passing notes, strolls out to the parking lot, whatever. That's a meeting under the law. And so if it is a meeting and town business comes up, then it has to be noticed, notes kept, and so forth. And since you can't have a meeting in a restaurant because it's not public accessible, and you can't have a meeting in all these other places for the same reason other than here, and certainly by private communication where no public can be involved, that's the actual definition of a meeting. It's not just when we're here. In fact, it's the antithesis of when we're here. When we're here, it's okay. It's when we're not here that it matters, okay? And so that's the sunshine, what you need to do is you need to think of yourself, and I say this in the video, as Caesar's wife, where a mistake could end up with your head chopped off. Now, it's not that dramatic, but when you are being investigated with the potential financial penalties and reputational harm and all the stuff that goes along with it, and you think, why did I even volunteer to do this job? You don't want to be thinking, if I had only listened to that stupid lawyer. You want to listen to me now and then not get involved in it. It's not worth it. Now, let me give you the examples on which I was investigated. And I like to use me as an example because nobody can be mad at anybody investigating a lawyer. Everybody likes that when that happens. The first time, I was actually in a conference room, not unlike the conference room back there, but with one difference. Instead of this drywall wall, there was a glass wall. And I was there with all the council members, as well as the police chief, the public works director. It was a pre-meeting or pre-workshop dinner, because they started their workshops at like 6. Nobody would have had time to go to home to eat dinner. So they said, well, we'll bring in dinner and we'll eat beforehand and then we'll come out. Now, I was there. I was still a young city attorney, but I knew the rules. And nobody discussed, topic-wise, any of the things on the agenda or any city. In fact, I remember one of the conversations was about our mayor at the time was a serious Yankees fan, so there was a baseball conversation, and there were some other conversations around youth sports and blah, blah. Nothing having to do with council business. But because of that glass wall, a former mayor, not just some routine citizen, a former mayor looked through that glass wall and said, that's a blatant violation. In fact, he poked his head in the door to say, this is the most blatant violation of sunshine I have ever seen. And then he reported it. And that's when the newspaper actually mattered. There was a front page for front page news. And an investigation began. I got interviewed by the state attorney. So did everybody else. And it literally took, that's why I make the timeline, about 3-4 months before they said, based on all the interviews which we conducted of everybody in the room, there was no violation of sunshine. Front page news investigation, the very back at the bottom column of the A section was no violation. And that's how it goes. The splashy news is there's an investigation, that there's nothing there is the stuff that doesn't make the news. And the reputational harm is done. And I'm like, I was there. I'm the city attorney. I was telling, you know, this didn't happen. The police chief was there. I pointed out that to the investigator. I said, you realize if there was a violation, the police chief's right there. He can arrest all of us. I mean, what are we doing? But state attorneys, which I love them, but I need you to tell you, they are political animals. If you haven't been paying attention to local politics, they are political animals just like any other elected official, and their number one priority should be protection of the public and following the law. But what is actually number one for many of them is staying in office. And one of the nicest, most popular ways to stay in office with the electorate is to prosecute politicians, because everybody likes it when that happens. I can't explain it. It's a weird phenomenon, but it's also factual, because there's a natural suspicion of politicians and people in politics and all that stuff. And so as a result, it's hard for a state attorney to pass up the opportunity to at least launch an investigation when they think anything is close to, quote, corruption. And it's also not wise politically for them to do it, because then they say, well, what, you turned a blind eye to whatever. So that's why this is important for you to understand. And it's not because I like it that way, I didn't make the law. It's a simple law in terms of reading it. It says all the things I said, you know, notice, public meeting, minutes kept. That's pretty straightforward. But it's the enforcement of it that you need to understand, because there are no free passes. There are not. Now, you can be charged civilly and may end up in a fine. But what is going to likely happen is that's worse than any of that, as I say, the reputational harm. That's the part that really hurts. And if you've actually violated it, yeah, there's a real chance you'll be prosecuted to the fullest extent. But if you haven't, then usually it's just, God, it's uncomfortable to have my neighbors looking at me sideways like I did something wrong, or even thinking that I did something wrong and so forth. I've told you I would tell you about both episodes. The second episode, this one still amazes me to this day, because the lady behind this video was responsible for it. The lady behind this video was responsible for it. She was involved, or anti-involved, I guess, with an arts organization that was funded by one of the cities that I represented. And the council had decided that I should get an attorney general's opinion on whether or not that organization, because of its funding through the city, even though it was not a city organization, was subject to sunshine law and public records and all that stuff. After discussions that happened behind the scenes with me and that organization, not elected officials, they were private citizens, and discussions with individual members of council, they said, hey, don't be in a hurry to do this, because the organization is going to try to reduce their reliance on city funding, because that is a huge factor in whether a private nonprofit is subject to sunshine law, just like you and I would be in a meeting situation. And so when she found out, this person who was then a council member, that I had not gotten the AG opinion that was requested, because I had been specifically told not to not get it, but not to go get it right away, to give them time to kind of wean themselves off city funding,
She said, well, that means I must have been violating sunshine law, going behind the scenes, manipulating count, or whatever. And once again, I'm in the midst of an investigation, which is, this one is clearly aimed at me specifically, when I couldn't be charged with anything because I'm just the lawyer, not elected official, as the law requires. Why is this significant for you to know? Because at the end of the investigation, which again, it seems like the timeline, about 3 or 4 months later, the state attorney, who subsequently, if you know Orange County, you would know this name, Jeff Ashton, got himself in a world of hurt with a little site called Ashley Madison and some other corrupt activities himself, but he wrote a 3-page letter in which he essentially said, while I cannot find a basis to charge Mr. Shepard, I can see how someone would think he violated the spirit of the law. And the question, of course, you would, well, how can you violate the spirit of the law that doesn't apply to you at all? But that's the point of this conversation, right? You don't have to be wrong for it to sting. And it stung. And so that's just why this is an important part of the conversation. Now, there's all kinds of stuff that we could talk about. But if you can just remember that business is discussed here, and if it's with anyone else, it's only here. If it's with someone who's not on this body, that's fine. But you need to understand that perception matters a ton when it comes to sunshine law. A ton, okay? And so it's not just that you're not actually doing anything wrong. It's whether people perceive you're doing something wrong. And as I say in the video, you're one vote away from being a hero today and a goat tomorrow. If someone doesn't like a position that anybody has taken on this body and then has an opening to come after you, in this political environment, you have to assume that that is possible to occur, if not likely, and conduct yourself accordingly. So before I move to anything else, anybody got questions about sunshine?
Just on your very first scenario,
yeah.
Was everybody behind that glass wall
yeah.
investigated equally?
We were all investigated. Everybody was interviewed.
Yeah.
Everybody was interviewed. And again, that's what's so funny, because it kind of, it's the whole idea of having glass walls so you can see what's going on. You know? It doesn't matter. People's perceptions are really important when it comes to this stuff. And so whether it's just having waffles down at the Waffle House or whatever it is, going down to the Hatch or wherever to eat, because these people, y'all may be friends. I don't know who's friends with who. But my point is, you got to understand that how people see it is as important as how you actually know what occurs. It doesn't mean you will ultimately be found guilty of anything or charged with anything. But the complaint itself is a pain in the neck to deal with, and it'll keep you awake at night, I know, twice I know. Okay? All right, so let me talk about the second thing that can get you in trouble where there's a potential criminal sanction. More likely there will be civil penalties, but you need to know about it, and that's public records. And this one is a little bit easier to explain. Here's what you need to know about public records. If you receive any correspondence, texts, phone call, not phone calls, because there's not a record of it, but if you received emails, memos dropped to your house, letters in the mail, whatever it is, and it involves town business, here's your number one defense to public records issues. Without hesitation, turn it over to the clerk and make her the custodian of those records, because the law says that if you keep those records and don't turn them over for whatever reason, maybe they would be embarrassing to the person who sent them because maybe they didn't realize when they sent them to you that they would be public records and you want to protect them. Well, you're taking on a significant risk because now you're the custodian of that record. And when the town gets a records request for records about correspondence between members of the board and the public or members of the board and anyone else or members in the board and other members of the board, if you choose not to provide those, now you're committing a crime that will get you in serious trouble. And if you have already provided them, you can say with a clean conscience, everything I have has already been copied to the clerk, and that way she can respond fully to the records request and, importantly, assert necessary exemptions. I use that word necessary for a reason. People are aware that there are exemptions for public records, right? So Social Security numbers are an example. That's not a public record. Certain kinds of addresses, like for confidential informants and law enforcement, certain certain members of law enforcement home addresses and other things. But in total, there's like almost 300 exemptions. As a custodian of records, you got to know them all, right? Because you're not permitted to just say, I don't care. They can have it. Whatever it is, they can have it. I don't care. As the custodian, you have to care because those objections and those exemptions are not for you. They're for other people. And so that's why the clerk has to look for Social Security numbers, has to look for exempt address and information, has to look that information, for example, that might violate HIPAA and so forth, has to, not wants to. The simple thing would be, well, you don't care, here. That's not the law. So you not only have to assert the right exemptions, you have to do it in a timely fashion. And if you choose to hang on to records that you know are records, then that burden is on you to get it right. So the number one thing I can tell you about public records is if you get them and they deal with city business or town business, you give them to the clerk immediately, and that way you can sleep well knowing that if there is a request, which there may or may never be, you don't have to worry that you didn't. Now you have are burdened with this decision of what to do and what how to do it. Now, this is much more significant, I think, but don't know because obviously I don't have access to council members' emails. But I do warn people about this, and I warn you in the same way. People are under the misimpression that their emails that are sent to their private email accounts are private. That's not what makes them private. It's the conversation that makes them private. You don't have a private position if it deals with town business now because you're on this board. There is no privacy. So if someone is writing you to say nasty things about the mayor, for example, or someone's writing you to say, you know, this town needs more development and I think they're stupid for not doing more, or whatever, and they're your best friend, not in this capacity, they're not. That's a public record. And so you should understand that so that if there are people who would be tending to send you things that if they knew were going to be provided to the public, they wouldn't send you, it's your job to warn them not to do so. But it's not your job after the fact to take it on yourself to protect them and put yourself at risk. If you choose to do that, you're taking on a risk. I'm telling you that. It's up to you to make the decision. I'm not the police. I'm just telling you how it works. So if you have sort of what we call in my business frequent flyers, the people who email you weekly or daily about whatever issues are on their minds, and they would be embarrassed if those issues were made public or those concerns were made public, probably be a good idea, A, to hang on to those things, but B, tell them you might not want to send these anymore unless you want to see them splashed all over, because that could happen if there's a records request. Okay? Any questions about that? All right. Now, as I said, the exemptions will be asserted by the clerk as necessary. And if she doesn't know what to do, they call our office and we go through, okay, this looks exempt, that's not, or whatever, and we go from there. And some records are only partially exempt. Like you can excerpt a name, but the substance of the record still has to come in and so forth. There's a lot to it. That's why there is a designation called CMC, Certified Municipal Clerk, and that designation means they've been through a lot of training to do the kinds of stuff I'm talking about, in addition to minutes and so forth. The people, the things that you know, there's a lot more that goes into it. All right, so the reason I focus on those two things first, before we get into anything else, is those are the two things that can get you civilly and criminally in trouble if you screw them up. So you don't want to. It's not worth it. But it's also not my intention in giving you this information to scare you off, because as I say in the video, the critical thing for you to know is without your service, government can't function. It needs volunteers willing to take the mantle, do the hard work, read the stuff that needs to be read, and follow the law. But you don't get a pass, and it's no defense, unfortunately, to say, but I was a volunteer, I didn't know. That doesn't work. It's been tried, it just doesn't work. You took on the mantle, volunteer or not, now this is your responsibility, okay? Now, there's a couple of other things we need to talk about, but they are less detail-oriented and mostly to get you what you need to know. One of them, which you guys deal with a lot, is the issue of quasi-judicial hearings. So there's a part of your stuff here is a very detailed issue of a PowerPoint I put together on quasi-judicial hearings. Particularly for the new members, I strongly urge you to pay attention to that, but I'm going to hit the highlights. And the first thing I want you to understand is what makes something quasi-judicial. Now, Joe could do this in his sleep, but here's what it is. If you are interpreting existing code as applied to a certain set of facts, i.e. a variance or a potential rezoning where you're going to make a recommendation, you are to be a judge. That's what the words quasi-judicial imply. Your personal opinions are not supposed to take a part of the situation. You're supposed to look at what the code says, are the requirements to be met, and whether the applicant meets them. Not whether you like the applicant, not whether you like the project, not whether you like any, it's whether did they check the boxes. In that regard, you get some help, because Mr. Lear, his staff, typically would provide a report that says that they think that they check the boxes. That is staff's opinion, and under the law, it's considered an expert opinion, and that means it rises to the level of, and this is the key language, competent, substantial evidence, because that is what is required on a rezoning, a variance, or whatever, to support the aspects that have to be proven by the applicant from the podium with its witnesses and its testimony that they meet or don't meet. Next question typically comes up, well, do I have to believe staff because they said it? Absolutely not. But you are not allowed to supply your own evidence. A lot of board members get this wrong. They think because of the information they brought in here as maybe experts in their own right. Maybe they were planners. Maybe they were engineers. Maybe they were contractors. Whatever their back, architects, that they know better than staff. That's okay, but your evidence is not okay. You use your expertise to ask important questions like, well, you reached this conclusion on this thing, but did you consider this? You can challenge the sufficiency of the evidence. You can challenge whether it was arrived at in an intelligent manner, but you can't say, I did my own research. As soon as those words come out, you've now taken yourself out of position of a judge who's asking probing questions to a witness. And you cannot be a witness and be a judge. Pretty simple stuff. If you think about it in a courtroom proceeding, you don't see judges taking the stand and saying, oh, by the way, I saw that accident. I know none of this happened. That's not how that goes, okay? So it's the same here. You use your training and experience to challenge the sufficiency of the evidence or whether you think it was well deduced or arrived at, and then you can use that if you believe that to reach conclusions and say, well, I don't think the case was proven that they meet the standards because. Or if there is alternative evidence, which sometimes is the case, evidence, not opinion, where, for example, an applicant's neighbors come in and they are opposed to the project and they do the smart thing, which frankly, sadly, most neighbors don't know to do, they will sign petitions, not evidence. They will have opinions, not evidence. But if they bring an appraiser that says, this will negatively affect my property values, here's my appraiser to tell you about why, that's evidence. If they bring someone to say, this engineering plan is going to affect my drainage, and here's the engineer, that's evidence. Not, I think this will create too much traffic, not evidence. I don't like it, not evidence. All of my neighbors hate it, not evidence. Evidence is evidence. It's not opinion. Can a lay citizen provide evidence? The answer is yes, but it has to be based on experience. So if I, as a lay citizen, oh, by the way, I'm a real estate agent, been doing this for 30 years, and I can tell you based on comps that I have pulled from the multi-listing service that this is what happens in areas where a convenience store goes in. The property drops, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm basing on, I'm a lay person, but I'm basing my testimony on actual experience that constitutes evidence. It's not a high bar, but it is a bar. And the difference between opinion and evidence is significant in your job as judges. And so it's important to know that. If you happen to be talking to neighbors who are opposed to a project, you might want to tell them, spend less time on petitions and more time on hiring professionals to tell their side of the story so you can actually consider it. And in situations where, on a given point, staff has one opinion and actual evidence is on the other, you can choose either one. You get to weigh the evidence just like a judge would, right? You get to decide, I think Mr. Lear was more credible than Joe Blow over here, or I think Joe Blow was more credible on this point. You get to decide that. But if Joe Blow is just an opinion and not an expert of any kind, then no, you can't choose, well, I like the citizen side of this because I'm for the citizens. That's not how it goes. And if you think about it in context of if you were charged with DWI and the evidence shows that you did not blow enough to meet the standard. But 12 of your peers or 6 of your peers said, well, they look drunk to me. How would that go for you? Okay, that's not the way this system is supposed to work. And that's the words quasi-judicial are chosen specifically to put you in a mindset of, I'm a judge here, not a citizen. I'm a judge trying to apply evidence to facts to determine what should be the right outcome. And so since most of the situations that come before you, I would suspect, particularly now that Ponce Inlet is significantly built out, it's not completely built out, but significantly built out, that most of the things are going to be where the staff is going to say, you know, the boxes are checked, possibly, in probably most of the cases. But if they say a box isn't checked, you should be paying attention to that. Because the hardest thing I find for people on planning board or zoning adjustment board or anywhere variances are involved is, I don't want to say no to my neighbor, but that's the job. And so that's what you need to know about quasi-judicial proceedings. How does that distinguish itself from legislative proceedings? I think this is something you should understand. One of the things that you carry as the land planning agency is the mantle of being the first line of defense on the comp plan. You are the people who are the first people to consider whether the comp plan should be amended, what should go into the evaluation and appraisal report, or what we call the EAR report, which is done every, is it 6 years, 7 years? Every 7 years. And ultimately make recommendations that go up to council. In that capacity, you can talk to anybody, not on this board, but you can talk to anybody, you can have opinions before you walk in the door, you can have your mind made up before you walk in the door, because it's not evidence-based. It is legislation. You're making the law for the town, or at least in this position, recommending what the law should be, i.e. the comp plan, for the town. In that regard, everything you bring to the table is okay unless it's a bribe. And I literally mean that. There is no way to overturn a legislative decision unless it was a corrupted decision based on essentially criminal activity, a bribe. So if because Mr. Cannon has had X number of years of experience in this and he thinks that having box stores would be a really bad idea for the town, he can have that opinion right now, and he can have it when y'all do the comp plan reviews, and he can say, by God, we should take away that use. That's fine. It doesn't have to be based on evidence. It can be based on opinion. It's legislative. You're making the law. It is one of the reasons why you'll see candidates who run on platforms, and you'd say, well, wait a minute. How do you run on a platform when you haven't heard any hearings, you haven't heard from the public? Because if it's legislative, you can. You can say, if I'm elected, I'm going to, one of the things that came up recently in one of my other cities, in fact, last night, was we need an ordinance on e-bikes. And you might have an opinion immediately that says we need it or that would be terrible. I don't know. Don't care. My point is you can have that opinion right now, and you can stick with that opinion to the grave if you want to. And you can try to put that in an ordinance that you are recommending to the council to approve because it's legislative. You're making the law. But if you are instead on the side of there's somebody out here trying to get a variance, then it's not opinion anymore. It's do they meet the requirements or do they not? So legislative, making law. Quasi-judicial, applying law. Any questions about that? Okay. All right. The last thing that I can remember that was on here to cover, and then I'm going to open for questions because I know that at least one of us has to leave at a certain time, and I want to cover everything that I need to cover, was Form 8B, conflicts of interest. Okay, so what is a conflict of interest in the context of voting? And typically, that means where you have, and this is the reason, for example, sir, that you couldn't recuse yourself. The law says that you are required to vote on everything where you do not have a conflict of interest. It's not a, well, I don't really feel like voting on it. It has to be an actual conflict. And the reason for that is because the idea is that officials elected and appointed would try to avoid, if they feel uninformed, if they feel like, well, I don't want to make my neighbor angry or whatever, and then nothing would ever get decided. And so they take that away from you but make it a law that you don't have a choice. You have to vote unless you have a conflict of interest. But what's a conflict? Under Florida law, it is where you have where the vote would inure to your special private gain or loss. And that or loss portion confuses people, but you'll understand it when I'm done. So on the first side of it, a special private gain or loss means money in your pocket, right? That the vote that you're making will ultimately put money in your pocket. Actual money, not speculative money, not like, well, my property values might go up or whatever, but actual money. So that's kind of easy one to